Hello. Hello. Welcome to the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And this hour is brought to you by
Team Power.
What is Team Power, Bill?
Gene Power is our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer. And, boy, if you want a tractor, that's the place to go in Reading.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Because the crowds go wild.
Yeah, they do. They do go wild. And right now they're running their spring special.
Yeah, wait. Winter ended last week.
I know it
became 75 degrees.
Yeah, it's February and we don't have a winter anymore. But they are running their spring special on repairs. So if you have a mower and mower season's going to be on us before you know it with this kind of weather, get in there and get that thing tuned up and get your blade sharpened. And they've got a special going that they'll take care of you. Also, too, if you have a small tractor you need fixed up, we can work on that as well. Team Powers at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, right off I-5. And their phone number is 226-9226. Give them a call.
Ta-da! Look at that.
There you go.
All right. And we've got archives stretching back to 2011. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. And all our information about our guest is on there. And the archive of today's program will be on there as well. And I got to tell you, you probably are going to want to go back. And one thing you're definitely going to want to do is listen to William's 27-minute video that's on the page about this. And I would send that to somebody, especially somebody that you know that might have been kind of drawn into the whole environmental thing from the standpoint of there are just too many people. That's what's ruining the environment and the earth, blah, blah, blah. And we don't have enough food, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I hear this from people fairly regularly. It might just be my line of work, but that's not an unusual thing for folks that are in that that universe to traffic in. The Center for Biological Perversity, actually I think it's supposed to be diversity, but they're not diverse. They're, for those of you who live in Northern California and who followed or who live elsewhere and have followed our shows, they were the biggest promoters of the reintroduction of wolves. So You start looking, they're super involved in population control. Let's see, they want wolves everywhere. Huh.
Yeah, that'll keep them out of the woods.
I mean, kind of starts to add up a little bit, a little too handily. So
there are a lot of environmental groups promoting sharks, like Defend the Shark.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Talk about ruining a beach, you know.
Yeah, it keeps me out of the water, trust me.
I'll tell you what, we think back on times like, you know, we were in Hawaii.
Improve my swimming, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not doing that anymore. So, okay, so tie this in with Margaret Sanger and that whole industry of birth control, because I think people, how do I want to say that? I think we've been led to believe, how's that, that the birth control thing was for our benefit, that for our, like, society's benefit, that's something responsible people do, and that abortion is a right, and that it's not killing, and you're not killing people, and all these things just must be done in a civilized society.
I can describe three different occasions in this movement. And keep in mind, this is a 230-year-old movement, probably older than that if you wanted to count some of the, you know, genocidal campaigns in the past. But in the modern English-speaking world, there's been two or three times when the movement has recruited some women to serve as the public face of the movement. And, you know, there was quite an active movement to legalize and popularize contraception in the 1870s, and they had Annie Besant ran that. And these people were all raving Malthusians, believed the world was overpopulated, they believed all the famines in Asia were caused by overpopulation, and they were promoting contraceptions. But after World War I-ish, in the United States, the movement, which was primarily then calling itself the eugenics movement, they recruited women like Margaret Sanger, another woman from Norway called Elise Ottensen Jensen. And these women had the same sort of biographies. Their mothers had had umpteen kids and had died young from having too many kids. And they were fronting a bunch of birth control clinics that were popping up in Northern Europe and along the U.S. Northeast as a better public face for the movement than the regular old crowd, which tended to be very sort of wealthy, older white men. This was a more of a public relations thing. You know, these old inheriting dynasties, they didn't, they weren't recruited and mesmerized by Margaret Sanger. No, they employed her to be their public spokesperson. She herself towed the party line, by all accounts, fully believed in it. At the time, the movement was explicitly racist, explicitly classist. She gave many speeches to the Ku Klux Klan. She called the primary motivation of birth control should be eliminating the dead weight of human waste by cleansing the gutters. These are her wow. lines, right? And you can also get them from Mary Stopes and other ones. Sanger would go on at great length about the millions of dollars we're spending on people who should never have been brought into this world. She was an outspoken supporter of racial improvement through sterilization. She was an outspoken anti-immigrant activist. This was, you know... I was impressed. I went to the Planned Parenthood Federation. They even have a little essay for us trying to debunk that. Great strategy. What they did was come up with three or four times where she's been misquoted, and they show that these were misquotes. You know, I could find you hundreds of quotes that definitely link her unequivocally to, you know, extreme population control, extreme racist ideologies, you know, an extreme attack on the rights of the poor to have kids, things like that. There's no questioning that, whatever. Moreover, like, she was the front person for the American Birth Control League, 1921. The entire board of directors, they were notorious racists even for their day. One of the leading figures, Lothrop Stoddard, from somewhere in the U.S. Northeast. This was someone who later became a very outspoken supporter of the Holocaust, you know, openly calling for the extermination of the Jews, who traveled to Nazi Germany so that he could be a guest sitter on the eugenics court, where they declared, you know, various people proper to be sterilized, and wrote a book about that, saying what a wonderful program the Nazi sterilization program was. I couldn't count the number of people I came across during the course of this, in and around Sanger and all the other people who were outspoken supporters of Adolf Hitler. I'll give you one of my faves. The next time you're on Google the phrase engender health. And it will take you to a nonprofit organization which has a budget of around $60 million, a lot of that coming from the U.S. government, and they're in the business of promoting reproductive rights and sexual freedom in the third world primarily, where $60 million moves a lot of people. And they have this little sort of video that comes on. It's all about, you know, these really happy women of color and how they're now living much better lives because of the work of Engender Health. Read closer. All they're doing is sterilizing people. Engender Health started out in the 1930s as an organization called the New Jersey Sterilization League. Their founder, another female who had inherited quite a bit of money, traveled to Nazi Germany so that she could write the English subtitles or captions for Hitler's speeches and propaganda films. It was a group that was, you know, very explicitly racist, very explicitly supportive of basically a genocide against American blacks. That group has gone through several name changes. It is now called Engender Health, and they're out there in the third world helping these women of color, you know, with their reproductive freedom.
What does Engender Health? You said that's primarily funded by U.S. U.S. dollars?
Yeah, the U.S. government.
U.S. government? Yep. And oh, does that come from, like, the health department? Where does that money come from? I mean...
That would come from USAID's Office of Population.
Hmm.
Now, they're not allowed to specifically pay for abortions, but they can seemingly pay for everything but an abortion, and then somehow facilitate it that way, and they can, you know, it's really dicey. It's all these organizations, you know, that... They're certainly not supposed to be paying for any sort of coerced abortions, but you know that their definition of voluntary is not the same as everyone else's.
Right.
But I encourage you to check out their website, and then Google the phrase, the New Jersey Sterilization League. This is the same organization. But certainly, yeah, USAID is one of the main bankrolls of it. It's different now. Trump's in power. There's always been this huge controversy regarding the UN Fund for Population Activities, which has got $1 billion a year budget. They were definitely implicated in some coercive sterilization and coercive abortions in China, and that has led to, certainly under Reagan, the U.S. government cut off their funding, and then Clinton restored it, Bush cut it off, Obama restored it. But the U.S. government, certainly from, you know, basically the year 1965 to 1985, was indubitably the world's largest promoter and financier of some of the most coercive population control programs we've ever seen. And that went on under Clinton. Again, there were some particularly nasty forced sterilization campaigns in Peru and places like that, paid entirely by U.S. taxpayers' dollars.
It's one thing that all these things are going on, but it's another thing that people are paying for it and they don't even know.
It's another form of coercion. It's another way that this movement builds itself so much these days that it's all voluntary. This is all voluntary sterilization and voluntary abortions. No one's being coerced into doing anything.
It's a right.
But if a taxpayer doesn't want to pay for this,
right?
That's a form of coercion right there. And if you're dealing with, you know, really poor people who are going to the doctor for help, and the doctor's got this set sales pitch, oh, you should have an abortion and you should have sterilization. It also undermines the sort of the meaning of voluntary as well. They're past the really bad old days. The last time I really know of a really nasty coercive sterilization program was against, there's a province of Peru that was mostly Inca Indians, and over 300,000 sterilizations. And as there was a government study in Peru after they changed governments there, over 90% of those women were told it was a reversible procedure.
Ouch.
Ooh.
This was a temporary sterilization.
See, in the last time this crossed our path was with Patrick Wood, and we were talking about technocracy, and back in the 20s, they had convinced people, he was adopted by a woman who had been sterilized by her mom, took her in and had her sterilized. She was part of the technocracy movement back then. And they were all told that if you have anybody who's a defective, basically, in your gene pool, you would be, you know, you'd be making the world better by not bringing, by not carrying that gene out. And so that,
yeah,
I mean,
that's classic eugenics. That
sure,
is classic
that,
eugenics.
That's,
right,
that's 100 years ago or less.
Keep in mind, eugenics was like thoroughly debunked. Eugenics is to genetics what, you know, astrology is to astronomy.
I see what you mean. Like,
these people thought that there was a gene for laziness.
Right, right.
These people thought, you know, they had a, you know, there was a single gene for, you know, things like, you know, propensity to steal or something like that.
Right.
They thought there was a gene for
poverty,
liberalism,
being accident prone. That's why they didn't want to pay for workers' compensation and all that sort of stuff. Well, the guy's genetically, you know, clumsy. You know, it's better off if he gets killed on the work site. We could end that old gene pool right there. Well, these guys were absolutely.
This is like the Darwin Awards on drugs. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Obviously, we're going to run out of time, and we're going to have to hold you hostage. Thank God you're trapped in the snow up there in Canada. This is working out to our advantage. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Deutschland is is happy and gay. We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. It's springtime for Hitler and Germany.
That's your theme song there, William.
There you go.
In your next video, you just need this playing in the background.
Copyright.
Bob.
Hey, William.
Mel Brooks, the producer, of course.
Of course.
Yes, of course.
And hey, it's a joke. You had mentioned China, and I had read something quite some time ago about China's population program has now kind of put them at a disadvantage for labor because there's so few babies being born. There's almost like a generation missing to kind of refuel their production. They don't have enough people to work in the factories now. Have you read about that? I'm sure you have.
There's probably about 20 countries that fit that description. Europe more than any of them. South Korea's got that problem. Japan has got that problem. These have all had these fertility suppression programs in spades. And, so there's also a question of how quickly your economy's growing and how quickly mm-hmm. you're automating labor, things like that. I suspect that, you know, that there was, the Chinese program's a bit overblown. As I write in the posting, I think to some extent they have conned the Western world. I don't think their program was as severe as we might have been led to believe. I believe there was a very severe period in it. Yeah, 1981, 1982, where it was probably the most extreme population control program ever. But it really only lasted for a year or two.
Okay.
One thing, keep in mind this, is that it's sort of complicated, but the sort of Chinese Communist Party had this thing about the four modernizations. They really had to improve their technology, and they had to improve their military and all this sort of stuff. And they really needed access to Western technology and Western markets to achieve that. And at that time, the U.S. government, this was the 1970s, was completely in the throes of population hysteria. And that sort of the trade-off was that they were going to have to, China was going to have to get really serious about population control if they wanted to be recognized by the USA, if they wanted the Western countries to open up their markets to them, if they wanted the World Bank to lend them money. So the UNFP, the United Nations Fund for Population Activity, the World Bank, these groups went into China. They strongly pressured the Chinese government to ratifying the one-child policy, which they did. Mm-hmm. And then there was a period basically, 81, 82 in there, where, like, I'm not exaggerating, probably 20 million people were sterilized under rather coercive conditions. There was all sorts of reports about pregnant women being dragged into the clinics and what have you. That got shut down within a few years. China's popularity there, the one-child policy was in effect from 1980 to 2015. China's population increased from 1 billion to 1.4 billion. That would have been impossible had there actually been a one-child policy. For a population to remain stable, the fertility rate has to be 2.1 kids per female. The 0.1 is because there's somebody die young or they don't have kids or what have you, that you actually need more than two per couple to sustain a population. So for them to increase their population by 40% in 35 years, they would have basically had to have an average fertility rate of over 3. So I really question how extreme that was. In all likelihood, and this is something that happens all around the world, these population control programs are internally very racist. The dominant ethnic group, the Hans in China, were being very coercive towards Tibetans, towards their Uyghur or the Muslim populations. You might have found a lot of coercion there, but it seems to me the numbers don't add up, and there could not have been a really imposed one-child policy. They seem to have a fairly, there's a lot of abortions and sterilizations going on there, but I suspect there has been some exaggeration of it. And there were teams from Britain and America that went to study they're dubious as well because they were very connected to the whole population control thing, but dubious. On the issue of, who gets, their population, their fertility limited, you see some really nasty examples of that in Africa, sort of whatever sort of ruling ethnic tribe is in control of the state. They're all for population control, but they usually have some other minority groups within the state who they are going to target for these, you know, really extensive coercion, abortion, sterilization, contraception programs. In all likelihood, it was probably what caused a lot of the ethnic wars that you saw in Rwanda and Burundi, because the initial ruling groups were so aggravating some of the ethnic minorities with these intensively promoted fertility limitation campaigns that it rises up into an all-out race war. That has happened on more than one occasion in Africa.
U.S. funding that goes to these programs, is it direct funding, or is most of it going through the U.N.? Do you know?
Be both. We're dealing with probably a couple of billion dollars. These are the ones that are going outside of the country. I don't have the numbers on top of my head, but I would say probably about, half or so, or hundreds of millions of dollars are going through various UN organizations. It's difficult. Just this morning I was trying to read the UNFP's website and try to figure out exactly where the money's coming from, where the money's going.
There's a
serious lack of transparency there.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a book out now about the hundreds of millions of dollars that go missing completely from some of these, specifically the UNFPA thing. But the USAID remains a major funder. I'm just ballparking it probably at around $500 million a year. Although Canada, because Trump is cutting back, Justin Trudeau is stepping up, and he's just announced that the Canadian government is going to be spending over $500 million for the next 3 years, so like $170 million a year U.S. to sort of pick up where the Americans are dropping the ball, and that money will definitely go for abortions.
Well, that's fantastic, and you guys just did a little gender bendering on your national anthem too, right? Aren't you?
Oh yeah, it's not that I know the lyrics. You know, we're Canadians; no one knows the lyrics here. Well, the national anthem count is a joke. It was originally written as a French-Canadian separatist anthem.
Oh.
They sing different lyrics in Quebec.
It isn't like ours where you boycott the Super Bowl because they knelt during...
No, we just don't know the lyrics up here. In my own lifetime, they've changed them a dozen times.
If they tried to change the lyrics,
the song
people
behind it is Mozart's The March of the Priests, which is oh so telling.
Yeah, it does mean something. Well, I looked up, gotta take another darn break. Hooray for capitalism, though. But I'm looking on this in gender health. So their website is engenderhealth.org, and I did post that on our page. But I was kind of taken in here. You had Africa, you had Asia.
Aren't they a very friendly, progressive bunch of people?
Aren't they? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, Africa, okay, yeah, I see that coming. Asia, yep, see that coming. The Americas, Americas. And in America, the only place that they are targeting, only place, for the $64,000 question, Bill Cundiff, can you tell us where in the United States they are focusing their efforts?
Detroit.
Texas.
Texas?
I was like, are you kidding me? That's not actually what I was saying. I was saying other things that are not radio friendly.
Wow.
Texas? What the heck? Hmm. Yeah. So anyway, if you didn't want to go read about that, I think you should, people who are listening.
I'm looking at the page right now.
Yes, people who are listening, I think this is highly interesting. We're going to give you 2 minutes to research that, and when we come back, I want your take on why they're picking Texas, because I already have my own ideas, and of course, people are always free to come up with their own ideas. We don't want to tell you how to think. We just want to point you to the information. So we're here with our guest, William Kay. His website is ecofascism.com. Just so easy for me to remember and catchy, super catchy. And you can find all the information about him and all the rest of the stuff we've been talking about at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
your first mistake. You took your lucky break and broke it in two. Now what can be done for you? You broke it in two. Too many people sharing.
And done me when I was your girl. Promised if I'd be your wife, you'd show me the world. But all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill.
All these and we should point out that Bob had that queued up before we talked about Texas.
Yeah, well,
well, that was just some classic country Loretta Lynn.
You've got game, Bob. Okay, so what's the deal? Why do they want to cut with the population in Texas?
Because there apparently, according to them, there is too many teenage girls in Texas becoming pregnant. Hmm. And it's because they don't have in gender health going there and educating young people about how traditional gender norms increase the risk of pregnancy.
Yeah, I like that part.
If they were only lesbians.
Exactly. Then it would be it'd be okay.
Yeah, could it have something to do with the fact Texas has been very active in shutting down a lot of Planned Parenthood offices in that state?
That would be, they're partnering with Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas to do that. I'm not sure why in gender health would in particular target Texas. What I've noticed about the environmental movement is they've, you know, divided up the entire world. Every square foot has been sort of parceled out. So it looks like, you know, tens of thousands of little organizations just fighting to save this little creek or fighting to save this little park. There are other, it's far more centralized than it appears. And they've really, every square inch of North America has a designated group defending it. I suspect that within the population control movement, somehow in gender health got the Texas file. And there are other groups within this movement that would be targeting, you know, Mississippi or what have you.
Mm, yeah.
Well. The entire country, as is Canada, is blanketed and saturated with antinatalist propaganda and activism. I don't think, I would be surprised if Texas was really being singled out by the movement rather than in gender health. Picking, you know, from their own stats, they're saying that there's an unusual amount of teenage pregnancies there.
Well, and for crying out loud, most of those are going to be conservative.
The fact that there's an unusual amount of people
exactly.
There has something
good
to do with
that.
That
is a good point. I mean,
that was the first thing I thought of was
politically incorrect babies.
Yep,
that's right.
They're traditionally
even worse.
They're gun advocates. They're states' rights advocates. These guys are hardcore. You know, Americans.
Don't
for the
mess
most
with
part.
Texas.
Exactly. I mean, they've got a long history there, mm-hmm. And it's interesting.
I hear what you're saying, but look, this movement is much stronger in Sweden and in other places like that, where they really drive it to the kids. So I don't think that Texas is being.
It just seems weird.
This group is.
Yeah, it just seems
it
weird with
weird
this group in the whole country. That
of all
that's,
the places in Canada, in the states, they pick Texas. But
yeah, no kidding. Like, that's our crisis point. Like, you know, all the little kids being born to gang members in, you know, Chicago and Detroit and L.A., that's not a problem, I guess. Anyway.
This movement, I didn't go into this, you know, thinking that there was that much. My research has led me to believe there's actually more anti-black racism at higher levels in the United States than I thought before. This movement has historically targeted blacks for abortions, for sterilizations, without a doubt. And they were very explicit in the earlier stages of the movement. This is what it was about. It was about suppressing the blacks' birth rate. Since Roe v. Wade, there's been almost 20 million black abortions. It is not as though, same with, you know, Black Lives Matter. They talk about police brutality. The reality is, you know, whites are also victims of that. There is a slight disproportion of police brutality against blacks. even more so in things like abortion, these abortion clinics. They really do target black neighborhoods, and they really targeted black Africa. There are definitely people in the higher echelons of the population control movement that have a thing for blacks. They really are going out of their way to target them, not to an extreme degree. I mean, black abortions are about a third of all the abortions in the United States, whereas blacks are about 13 or 14% of the American population. So it's a noticeable bump. You might be able to explain that entirely through poverty. You know, that the blacks are poorer than the rest of the population, and then this is leading them to want more abortions. But it's clear from the history of this movement that they have long and explicitly, certainly Margaret Sanger and her friends, one of the women that she worked with was an outspoken black racist, anti-black racist, who invented various contraceptions and, used black women for human experiments and things like that. There's some real nastiness in there. And, I can't deny it that there is, this movement, the population control movement, has a noticeable, although not overwhelming, hostility towards blacks. And I didn't go into that thinking that this would be the case. And so much of mass media seems to be hyping and promoting blacks far more than the talent of the entertainer would warrant. Yet it's pretty clear that on the ground, they're targeting them. The key concept is crypto-eugenics. You know, the whole movement had a sea change of opinion after World War II, and there was a general understanding that they would no longer be explicitly racist. They wouldn't even use the word eugenics anymore. They were basically carrying on the same program as before with some modifications. But before 1940s, the movement was openly racist. And after that, they learned to put a lid on that. And the brain, the masterminds of that was the head of the British Eugenics Society, C.P. Blacker, and the Frederick Osborne of the very powerful Osborne family of New York City. And they just said, it's just really counterproductive to really be insulting the people you're trying to suppress the fertility of. You know, if the Ku Klux Klan marched into Detroit and set up a Planned Parenthood clinic, cut the ribbon, you know, no one would go there. Right. There was a time in the early 70s when the Black Panthers used to attack birth control clinics. Nation of Islam, a lot of these militant black groups used to physically attack birth control clinics because they viewed them as attempted genocide.
Right.
Which
to some extent. I mean, those, if you read from their point of view, they tend to exaggerate. It's like Black Lives Matter. They are exaggerating the degree to which they are being centered out by the police department.
Right. Right.
If you read the black militants, yeah, they exaggerate. They describe the whole population control movement or the abortion movement as entirely devoted to suppressing blacks. No, most abortions in America are not performed on black women. But there is this bump in the statistics, undeniably, that it's there.
I've always heard that the bulk of the abortion clinics are in black neighborhoods. Is that actually...
I haven't seen sort of a mapped out. There's a video they put out a long time ago called American Abortion, Hitler Would Have Loved It. They do target poor neighborhoods. They target those areas. That was always the thrust. You know, the upper middle class people, they have these posh hospitals they can go to. The whole point of the political movement was to get abortions to people that would not have otherwise had them, that would not have otherwise been able to pay for them, and they definitely worked. You know, there's
So you put them in neighborhoods.
2,000 abortion clinics in America.
Right, right.
Jeez.
I heard a while back too that Bill Gates was a big advocate of population control. Have you heard that? Is that true?
Oh yeah, there's a number of videos of him online pontificating about that quite explicitly. There's one video online. He's talking about climate change. He's got this little algebraic formula, you know, number of emissions times number of people. And in that video, he quite clearly says that he wants to see human population growth brought to zero,
wow,
which is refreshing. You know, having gone through so many of these documents and videos, most of the people in that movement are calling for population reduction. Like Ted Turner is calling for an 80% reduction in the Earth population. There's a group, Negative Population Growth. They want like 100 million people in America. Like so many of these groups,
wow,
you know, it's almost refreshing when they're only talking about population stabilization. You got to wonder, you know, what sort of policies would you have in effect to have the population to be, you know, radically declining
reduced
over the course of a generation?
80%.
Yeah, there's only one method of doing
that. Ted, if he wants to take one for the team.
War, famine. I think Malthus listed them all, you know, war, famine, plagues, what have you. There's ways to do it. Some of the stuff I read about, like in Stephen Mosher's book about AIDS in Africa, I don't want to go too far down the conspiratorial road, but just as it relates to population control, all around the world, different countries have different favorite methods of population control. And in Africa, at the behest of these elite population groups like the World Bank and USAID and UNFPA, the most popular form of population control was those injectables like Depo Provera, things like that. In order to implement that program, it meant over the course of between 1990 and near 2000, they distributed over 100 million reusable injectable needles into poor neighborhoods of Africa.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of people believe that that did more to promote AIDS and HIV than anything else. They also insisted, the population control masterminds, that HIV/AIDS be merged with their birth control program. So there'd be a single clinic catering to both. There was a very good study that showed that the number one correlation between getting AIDS in Africa as opposed to anywhere else was whether or not you had attended these clinics, these birth control clinics. In Africa, AIDS is almost exclusively or overwhelmingly something that inflicts women of childbearing age, whereas everywhere else in the world, it's the injection drug addicts, it's the homosexuals, groups like that are the primary carriers of the virus.
Yeah, so how do you
explain
that?
Completely different picture in Africa.
Yeah, so how do you explain that? I mean, that's pretty much the clinics.
Well, I can tell you that the politicians in Africa, there's hundreds of them, openly call it genocide. That there was an actual strategy to infect the African population with that virus. I don't know. I mean, for that sort of an allegation, I'd want a little more evidence. But, yeah, it seems to me it's beyond comprehension or beyond believability that these epidemiologists who were setting up these programs would not be aware that the way they designed these programs, that mass distribution of needles, the fusing of the HIV/AIDS with the birth control programs would not lead to a spread.
Oh,
and a
sure.
lot of the sort of sterilizations and what have you there are done in horribly unsanitary conditions.
Right. Well, just the reusing of needles is just
asking for a health
problem.
They reuse the needles. That is standard practice there. They reuse them hundreds of times.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
And then they throw them in the garbage and the rag pickers get them and they still circulate in the economy.
Right, right. Which are still good.
No, so that Stephen Mosher's book, he's adamantly of the opinion that that it was the population controls policies in Africa led to the explosion of AIDS in Africa. He directly links that.
Wow.
And put a lot of zeros behind the number of dead people, for sure.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. And you've only researched this up into the, 70s, 80s?
I've gone beyond that. I stopped writing that posting in the 1990s.
Okay.
I've read quite a bit beyond that, but to delay it all out, just to even describe, because it's such a huge movement.
Right.
You know, if I wanted to give you a 1,500-word profile of what the World Bank is doing or what the UNFPA is doing, I mean, it would be hard to do that. This is a massive movement that... collectively, if you want to include a lot of the pharmaceutical programs there, their contraceptive divisions, it's got a budget in the tens and tens of billions of dollars. And if you go through the boards of directors of these organizations, you find these guys like the chief executive of Burslin Marsteller, that huge public relations firm. He's involved. A lot of these people are very deeply plugged into the mass media. This is a very powerful movement at many different levels.
Yeah, because in your video, you spoke of video, sitcoms and how it wormed its way into society starting in the 60s and 70s. We've got to take one last really quick break, and then we'll come back with you to the top of the hour. And I think
I think there's going to be more because I really want to find out how this fits into the whole, you know, we have 21 genders thing. That
We got even more up here.
Oh, you have more? Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No wonder you guys can't.
I read that article.
No wonder you guys can't learn your national anthem. You got other things to worry about. We'll be right back with our guest, William Kay. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Didn't have to keep it. Wouldn't put you through it. You could have swept it from your life, but you wouldn't do it. No, you wouldn't do it. And you're having a baby.
Wow. Swept it from your life.
I know. Yikes. Just like, kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Another Canadian artist, I'll have you know.
Oh.
Paul Anka.
There you are.
You Canadians.
See, hey, we were talking on the break about...
lots of stuff, but...
Yeah, lots
okay,
of stuff.
Okay, I just was flashing through your table of contents, and one thing I want to make sure we don't miss is the population control movement banning DDT.
Yeah, DDT.
Because that whole Rachel Carson and Silent Spring was really an explosion of the environmental movement, and DDT didn't actually hurt people, but people still believe it's poisonous.
Yep, I would estimate that that decision has killed several hundred million people.
Sure.
Because it killed mosquitoes.
Most of the mosquitoes.
Right.
Several hundred million, yep. The 80% of all the infectious diseases inflicting humanity are carried by insects or small arthropods. DDT was represented a major breakthrough in insecticides. I list probably, yeah, I could have done more. There's actually been quite a bit written about this. Actually, online, there's even a malaria clock counting the number of people they think they've been killed by the DDT ban. DDT was absolutely harmless. You know, in World War II, American soldiers used to, you know, give themselves total body washes with DDT. No one got sick. It was a delousing agent. A lot of they helped out a lot of the refugees and displaced persons. One of the books I read shows that American soldiers were spraying these women's hairs with big clouds of DDT. They were lining up to get the treatment because it was killing the lice. It was absolutely harmless to people. In the, you know, 1950s, late 1940s, they became aware that the population control movement became aware of what an effect it was going to have. These people had already been campaigning against mosquito eradication. They're all over the United States. They're draining swamps and things near the cities, just kill the mosquito breeding grounds. One of the leading campaigners against DDT was someone who had for decades been campaigning against mosquito eradication. Like, they're pro-mosquito. You could even go online and find this Mosquitoes Unlimited document, you know, because birds eat mosquitoes and, you know, they're part of the ecosystem. But mosquitoes are just a scourge on humanity.
Sure.
The Conservation Foundation, which the Osborne family set up in the 40s, financed a lot of this bogus research alleging that the DDT was harmful to humans, that it was wiping out various wild species. That served as the sort of groundwork for Rachel Carson's book. It was one of the most hyped, the most publicized books up to that date. Millions of copies were sold. And a lot of people hold that out as sort of the beginning of the modern environmental movement.
Yeah.
But I list in the website, you know, numerous quotes from leading environmentalists who quite explicitly say that this spraying of DDT is causing a human population explosion. And it was. Because malaria was such a scourge in so many parts of the world that the moment you took that out of the equation, so many more of their kids survived. You were seeing a very noticeable and very quick population growth in countries where the spraying had been going on. Usually it went on in conjunction with draining of swamps, draining of marshes near populated settlements. Something the exact opposite of what Malthus wanted. He wanted to put the settlements in the marshes so they would be living in these sort of bug-infested environments.
And now everything we have to do here is about wetlands. You know, everything is about a wetlands. We got to have wetlands everywhere. I really
like
mosquito
ranches, and also it's a huge waste of agricultural land.
Well, for people,
those are optimal places to have farms. Drain the wetlands,
and you can't build, right? I just for people who are not maybe big on going and reading all this stuff, I really hope you do. I hope you at least scan through the chapters and find things that are interesting, because in the population control movement banned DDT chapter, if I can call it that, there's this one quote. In 1958, Aldous Huxley rallied the masses against DDT. Best known for his novel, Brave New World, Aldous was a staunch eugenicist and chronic Asiaphobe. He penned glowing reviews of one of Madison Grant's books, vigorous attacks on an anti-eugenicist play. Here was one of his quotes that you have here. Society must be organized on a caste basis. The rulers and their advisory experts will be a kind of Brahmins controlling, in virtue of special and mysterious knowledge, vast hordes of intellectual equivalent. I mean, of sundries or suitors
and untouchables.
And untouchables. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah.
In the overall posting, you will find about a dozen quotes like that.
Aldous Huxley,
of these people
like,
population
what?
Control explicitly calling for some sort of totalitarian state.
Well, I can't believe we're out of time.
I can believe we're out of time. I had a feeling this was going to go like a little wildfire, but there's a lot in here, and I think that it'll just get worse and or, you know, continue to repeat if people aren't aware of what they're looking at.
Yep.
And this is all packaged so well. We're really just babes in the woods looking at all this.
Okay.
Thanks a million.
My pleasure entirely. Thank you guys both.
We'll be chatting with you soon. We want to know how this brings us up to current time. Uh-oh. Oh, I guess he was all done.
He's done talking.
The indubitable William Kay.
He's gone.
He's off practicing the Canadian National Anthem. That's what we know he's doing.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining
Canada.
Us. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Tons of information today, including the memo that you keep hearing about. And I hope you go read it. It's real short, and it's very interesting.
And you can find us every Sunday on KCNR, Shasta, Reading.